You are tuned in to the Kenai Conversation. This morning, we are talking about personalized learning in the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. And along those lines, I've got, the guy in charge of it and the information liaison from the school district to tell us all about these things. We have John Apatis and Peggy Erkineff. How are you folks today?
Great.
Yeah?
Really good. Thanks for having us.
Other than there's some snow returning.
Oh, good grief.
A little bit of wind out here in Kenai with some snow blowing, but we're happy to be here.
Oh, is it snowing here already?
Yeah.
It is.
Skiffing a little bit.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it's going to... They're expecting a foot at Turning a Pass.
Are they really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And more down towards Portage.
Happy spring.
We actually had to get prepped this morning in case there was going to be some school delays or closures in Seward and think about that snow coming.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're expecting snow at sea level down there. Man. John and I, we were reminiscing about your first day, first year as a principal.
Yes, I was. Yes, we were.
And actually, that was my first year at the Clarion.
Okay.
Actually, I think I was brand new at the Clarion. One of my first assignments was writing about a streaker at a football game at Sohi.
At Skyview.
Skyview, rather.
Yep.
I'm sorry. And you were the principal there.
That was 19, coming up on 20 years ago. 20 years ago this fall, it'll be. So.
Yeah. And you tell me the young man is doing okay and has clothes now.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. The last I heard, he was doing just fine clothed. Yes.
That's great. Well, you know, I'm gonna jump right in, and I'm going to ask you just the broadest question possible about personalized learning. What is it?
Personalized learning is one of the misconceptions about it is that it's a thing. It's something that we do. It's, you know, when a teacher goes to a conference, they maybe get materials or they get a book or they get something that they come back and they put into the classroom. And that's not what personalized learning is. Personalized learning is not about going out and getting something and doing it in class. So it's not a noun, it's a verb. It's what we do with kids. And really, when we distill it down, it's about redefining a couple of keywords. And those keywords are, what does teaching mean? What's the definition of teaching? And what's the definition of learning? And so personalized learning really is looking at how teachers go about structuring their classroom to help facilitate how they're teaching students and how students are actually engaged in their own learning.
Oh, so this is something far larger than what I was thinking of.
Yes.
Or what the title may make me think of.
Absolutely.
Wow. Why was it needed in the district?
It's a great question. Yeah, so why? Because education has been, I mean, it's working okay. I think there's a couple of things. Number one, really, when you look at education and what we have, we're running on a system that's 200 years old. You know, education was designed in the format that it currently is, was designed to prepare people to work in the factories. It's when we were getting people off of the farms into the cities, and we needed people to listen to directions, follow instructions, and do what you're told to do so that you can work on an assembly line. And that's not the world that we live in today. Part of that reason, too. So part of it is just looking at preparing our kids for their futures. And when we look at what are skills that kids need to be successful in the world, not only today, but 10, 20 years into the future, it's not necessarily about can you remember the year that the Mayflower sailed across the ocean, because we can Google that. It's really looking at more problem solving in some of those global, you know, situations of working with a team to help solve problems. So that's part of it. And then the other part of it is, if you really look at our society, you know, in our adult world, try and envision what our world would be like without personalization. You know, you go to Starbucks and you say, I want a, you know, macchiato caramel latte with blah, blah, and their response to you is, I'm sorry, all we have is coffee. You get black coffee. That's all we serve. If you go to a restaurant and say, I would like this, and they say, I'm sorry, we only have one item on the menu, and it's either you take that item or you not. You know, our world right now really is a personalized world. When you in finance, if you're an investor, you know, if you went to your investment person and said, I want to invest in this stock, and they say, I'm sorry, you know, that's not an option for you. In medicine, you know, when you go to the doctor, we've got choices of what we want to do. And I think that's the big reason for personalized learning in education is our world really is about personalizing. And education is catching up to that now. And that's kind of where the personalized learning idea is coming from, is kids do have choice. Kids can go out and they can take online courses. They can enroll in universities. They have these options to find credit opportunities out there. And our days of saying, I'm sorry, we can't do that in our schools. We need to rethink what schools are.
Interesting. Now, did this the concept of this personalized learning thing come in the vacuum of when No Child Left Behind disappeared, or how did this come about? Somebody invented it somewhere, and you went to a conference and said, "Hey, let's try this." Or
it's been evolving. You know, the concept of personalized learning has been around for centuries. You know, Aristotle and Socrates did elements of personalized learning. You know, back when they did Socratic seminar and working, you know, talking through issues with people. You know, the modern concept of personalized learning really is coming. I think we've done pieces of personalized learning. We've always, as teachers, have always tried to personalize. You know, I've got 25 kids in my classroom, and how can I best meet the needs of individual students in my classroom? It's challenging, though, when you're a classroom teacher and you've got 25 students on how, and I've got 54 minutes or 50 minutes, how do I reach 25 different kids in 50 minutes? And so conceptually, personalized learning is nothing new, and teachers have always strove to personalized learning, but it's been challenging. I think one of the reasons that this is becoming kind of a more central point in education is we have tools more readily available to us in terms of specifically technology, that we can leverage technology to help teachers truly personalize. And it's not, I want to really caution, it's not about replacing teachers with computers, and it's not about simply putting kids in front of computers, but computers and technology is a viable tool, one of many tools, but it's a viable tool that teachers can use to help personalize. Technology is becoming pretty ubiquitous right now. And so I think the personalized learning idea is gaining some momentum because it is readily accessible, not only in schools, but every kid has a device. It's everywhere.
Right.
It's silly for us to not consider how can we best maximize and leverage that.
Sure. You know, I'm looking at your website here about this, and I'm on the page with the what is personalized learning, and it's got the four things here, the core four elements that include flexible content and tools, targeted instruction, data-driven decisions, and student reflection and ownership. I think you were just talking about targeted instruction, which is something that, you know, I guess I was thinking going into this that targeted instruction was, you know, really what this was only about. Turns out it's not.
Correct.
From the last 8 minutes of hearing you speak. But I imagine that even the amount of targeted instruction that's involved has got to be difficult with 25 students, but, you know, classroom sizes, we always hear that they're growing. and that funds are shrinking and all this. I mean, is 25 the classroom average classroom size in the district? Maybe I'll ask over here.
Actually, it's smaller,
oh.
Especially with our elementary ed children. And so we do have a range of classes that high schools are currently at one teacher for every 25 students. Middle schools are. Our elementary schools, our small elementary schools, have 19 students in a class. Small schools have 17. And elementary schools are anywhere from 20 to 24 students.
Oh, okay. Well, that seems reasonable. I mean, I'm not a teacher, but, you know, that seems about the size a lot of teachers have always said is reasonable.
You know, there is research about how big of a class can you have with our elementary and our middle school students especially that's really effective. And we've really worked hard the last several years of doing some major reductions in the district over the last 4 years to keep that as far away from the classroom and protect our classroom sizes so that our students actually have a little bit more focused attention, and especially in the younger grades, I like to call them the littles, but in those early years with our littles, that we really have a good pupil-teacher ratio for those students.
Mm-hmm. Oh, here, John.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. So the individualized or the personalized program, is that for all grades then?
It is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's K-12.
And we've done it in several waves. John can talk a little bit more about that. But we started actually with our younger grades and our elementary schools. So our younger students are really engaging with this. And it's so fun when I get to go visit schools and see classrooms with students completely engaged and in different learning centers. And the classrooms don't look like, a lot of the classrooms don't look like the typical classroom I went to, and I was certainly a non-traditional student, a good student, but I didn't learn like everybody else did. So personalized learning would have been fantastic for me.
Mm-hmm. Huh. How does it look different than a regular classroom somebody might remember?
So I'll share an experience that I saw recently, and then JP or John could also share some that he sees throughout the district. But maybe it's a little bit more like a coffee shop in a middle school classroom, for example, and even some elementary classrooms that I've seen, where there's different stations and rotations set up. So students are working and the teacher's moving through and working deliberately with those students. But you might have a group of students that are working on a computer on a particular project. You might have another group that are working in a pod together. You might have another group that are sitting on a couch reading and or a table and working together in another way completely. And some are on the floor if they're on their computer and working on the floor. So those are some different ways you actually see a classroom. And you think, you walk in and you think, huh, what are these kids doing? Are they just hanging out or are they learning? But I can tell you from being at Skyview Middle School in a classroom, I stayed through three periods and I watched kids in that classroom come in, get engaged, go right to what they were doing, interact with their instructor, and when the bell rang, they weren't all running out right away either to their next class. And the next group came in, and there was so much energy and focus happening in that class. I was so impressed. I wanted to be a middle school student, kind of, again.
And I think Peggy touched on a really important point that I want to go back to when you talked about class size. And class size is important. And of course, the lower that number we can get, the better it is. And ideally, the perfect class size is 1-to-1. You got one adult to one student. That's unrealistic that we can't do that. And so the idea of personalized learning, there's two important things when we talk about structuring classrooms. One is we want to try and get down as close to one-to-one as possible. And by breaking kids into groups, as Peggy talked about the different stations, you can have, you know, a class of 25, you can have, you know, a group of seven over working on maybe some computers for a period of time, and you can have a group of seven or eight working on a project in the back of the room. But ultimately, you've got these different groups, and that allows the teacher to bring in a group of, you know, maybe five, six, seven kids who really need some help on one particular area. And it gives the teacher the ability to work with a much smaller group of kids to meet their individual needs while the rest of the class is still engaged in something productive, in some sort of productive learning. And conceptually, that's important because, again, let's use a class of 25. You know, any teacher will know that when 25 kids come into my classroom, and let's say I'm going to be teaching how to divide fractions, and in that class of 25, I have maybe five kids who already know how to do that because I learned it the year before that or the year before that. And you've got those higher end kids who know how to divide fractions, and you've got another group maybe on the other end who really struggle with that. And then you've got a middle group who, with maybe some basic simple instruction in direction, they're going to pick up on it pretty quickly. And so part of the idea of personalized learning is those kids who already know this, do they really have to sit through a 30, 40, 50, 70 minute lesson on how to divide fractions when they already know how to divide fractions? And so that's part of where breaking up into smaller groups is you can take those 7, 8 kids who know how to do it and you can give them some work or some sort of assignment or a project that pushes them at their level on what they need for their learning. And you can divide your class into groups like that, and you can target your instruction. That's one of those core fours, is target instruction. You can target your instruction to meet the needs of the kids and not necessarily just because I have 25 and I have 50 minutes, you're all going to get the same lesson, even though you may not all need the same lesson.
You know, that sounds like a little bit of a one-room schoolhouse in a classroom.
There's some elements of that, yes. And it's funny because as we work with, we do have schools in our district that are one-room schoolhouses. You know, we've got a couple of schools that only have 15 students, K-12, with one teacher. And it's we've been having those conversations with those teachers and those principals on the fact that, you know, some of our teachers have been doing this concept for years because they've had to in a one-room schoolhouse.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was looking at the four elements here, and data-driven decisions caught my eye. Frequent data collection informs instructional decisions and groupings. One of the complaints of No Child Left Behind, or one that I heard a lot about, was teaching to the test. And yes, the only thing kids are learning is what's on the test. How do you get around that here, or is that an issue?
And that's a great question. I would totally agree with it. And that's always been one of my frustrations as an educator is, you know, how much emphasis has been placed on a test. And I think I've always been of the mindset that if you worry about the things that matter, you know, the quality instruction, connecting with kids, building those relationships, as best we can, personalizing instruction, the test will happen. You know, all of that stuff on the other end of things, like on the assessment pieces, it'll fall into place if we've got the other pieces in place. And I think that's what I like about personalized learning is it puts the emphasis on those core four. It puts the emphasis on the student and what does the student need, with the understanding that if we meet kids where they're at with the needs that they have and we meet those needs, everything else will come. Test scores will come, the relationships will come, their connection with school will come. All of that comes in place if we're truly doing that core four.
Collecting more data? I mean, is this like more tests than before, less tests, same amount of tests?
No, I mean, and the reality is we still have our state assessment. We've got the PEAKS assessment, which is the state assessment, and I think that's always going to be here. I don't think that should drive what we do. It is one indicator of what we do. The district has a 5-year strategic plan.
Thinking more about here it says instructional decisions and groupings.
Yeah, so
In classroom.
Correct.
Decisions.
And so where I was going with that is part of our strategic plan is we've created what we call key performance indicators. So looking at different data points to assess, you know, how kids are progressing through our school district. And you're right, historically the state test has been the indicator. Our district has come up with much more than just one indicator. We've got a whole list of indicators. And part of them are now social emotional. How are kids connecting with each other? How are they connecting with their schools? And so that data collection and not just that one test point. And the important point is even the state test, that's only once a year. If we wait till April to get some data on how kids are doing, we're way too late. And so the idea of that is coming up with things that teachers on a daily or at the very least a weekly basis, we're getting data on how are kids doing academically, how are they doing socially, how are they doing emotionally, how are they doing that, and we come up with some way to measure that on a daily, weekly basis. Now we can actually change instruction in real time to meet the kids of, okay, I need to do something different tomorrow rather than wait to see how do they do on the test in April to make the decision on changing something.
How are you doing that?
I'm sorry?
How are you doing that? How are the teachers doing that?
We have a couple of... academic measures. We've got right now a performance series is something that we're doing with to track how kids are doing academically. They're little snapshots in time. Teachers themselves, a lot of teachers have created what's called formative assessments. The idea of a formative assessment is it's not waiting until it's the opposite of a summative assessment, which is at the end of something assessing how kids did. And that's really what the state assessment is. It's the end of the year assessment on how we did. The idea of a formative assessment is we need something on a regular basis. And so we do have some different assessments, academic assessments that teachers are giving regularly district-wide. The teachers also have a lot of their own created, you know, some of it comes from, you know, maybe a chapter test or the end of a unit test or the end of a day assessment. But the teachers themselves, a lot of them have created weekly assessments just to get a gauge on what did the kids learn this week, and then using that data to adjust instruction for the following week. And a lot of that is homemade by the teachers.
Right. And, you know, I did a story about a month ago from one of our teachers that's really embraced personalized learning. And one of the things that really stood out to me was we're creating lifelong learners in our students. So the role of the student is taking responsibility for your own learning as well. So she has one-on-ones with her students, and they're actually doing some of their own assessment of their learning. And in a direct one-to-one conversation with the teacher, really flipping the whole learning process in a way and putting responsibility into the students for their learning, and then having support from your teacher, which that's how I learn best. I think that's an amazing way to have that self-reflection, and it helps me understand how I'm a learner and what do I need to do, where am I failing forward, where are my gaps, where do I need to pony up a little bit and put in some more effort. But what really excites me, and then with my teacher as well, if this really excites me, how can we design this so that I can really fly with what my learning style is and within the parameters of what's happening?
And going back to the beginning, that's exactly what Peggy's saying, is what I said in the beginning is personalized learning is about redefining those key terms, teaching and learning. What does it mean to be a learner? And that's one of the core fours, is that student ownership and reflection on empowering students to take responsibility and ownership of their own learning. And what does that look like in a classroom of today?
Yeah, but that student probably wasn't a third grader.
Those were a little bit older students, but I'll tell you what, I look at the little kids, and when you frame the questions in the right way, they know how to have the conversation. They really do. I'm just so impressed with when we don't have the sage on the stage with all the answers, and I was the kind of student that wanted to get all the answers right and be the teacher's pet. I mean, that was a language, you know, I don't even know if that's still used anymore, but I would do everything right. And I didn't learn, I was doing it for somebody else versus finding that inside of myself and having the right set of questions asked gently of me when I was little to help me do my own reflection on my own learning. So I think the team that happens with the parental support and with what happens at home for a lot of our kids, and then what's happening in the classroom and kids talking to each other, I just see it I see school and learning happening very differently than when I was little.
Clearly it's been a long time since I was little, just by looking at me.
You and I both.
All three of us.
But I guess I'm having a hard time imagining students with much self-reflection regarding their learning. You know, there's those students from Florida who are pretty mature and they're in the nation's capital now and stuff, but, you know, seventh graders, I don't know.
I think we have a full range of young people, right? And they're coming from all different environments at home, and they're coming to our schools. And one of the things that we do in our district is we meet the need of every single child that comes through the door. Nobody gets excluded. So that's why we have a full range of services that happen as well, with pupil services, with our special education, with our gifted and talented programs, and then with what we're doing with personalized learning. That said, I really appreciated the superintendent making a comment earlier this year that I really picked up on. And he said, we're creating lifelong learners, not world-class test takers, but world-class problem solvers. And I think our young people and the mindset right now is shifting. The devices, you can't see me because I'm talking, but I'm holding an iPhone X. I've got my laptop here. And I'm tuned into information in different ways. And I know that the question I'm asking teenagers now is not, what do you want to be when you grow up, or what do you want to do? It's, what problem do you want to solve? What grabs your interest in your heart that you can make a difference with? And kids can grab that. And the conversations, if you ask a young person, what problem do you want to solve with your life? Or what solutions do you want to bring to something? That wasn't a question I ever really got asked, but that creates an amazing conversation with young people right now.
And you bring up a really good question, and I think I want to illustrate the idea in my answer on the fact that some people do have a hard time imagining what does that look like for a seventh grader or a kindergartner. Can a kindergartner really have student ownership and reflection? Can that really happen when you're 5 years old? And I would adamantly say, yes, absolutely it can. And I think, again, that's part of the redefinition of the idea of teaching and learning, and the fact that what personalized learning is not about a thing. It's not about replacing a teacher with a computer or something like that. It's about reshifting how we're engaging in this teaching and learning process with kids. And I had a conversation last week, and I loved what the woman said. She talked about student voice, and she talked about the fact that when we talk about giving students voices, that that's the wrong way to talk about it, because we don't give student voice, because students already have a voice. It's about empowering kids how to use their voice, and that's why the teacher will never go away. That's why it's imperative that we have adult teachers in every classroom with kids, is because that's part of the education process, is that adult in the classroom helping a seventh grader or a five-year-old discover their voice, discover what is it that you want to learn more about, and how can I help you as the educated adult, the professional, how can I help steer you in a direction that's going to be positive for you and your learning? Still understanding that as the school, we have a responsibility to provide education. So it's not, again, it's not about just letting kids loose and doing whatever they want. It's about using that professional in the classroom to help guide and steer those conversations about, what do you want to learn and how can I help guide you in your learning journey?
You know, before talking with you this half hour, my first thought was, this resembles a lot like those liberal arts colleges where you design your own major,
you know.
Like basket weaving and stuff, freeform basket weaving and stuff. Yeah, I don't know. I seem to be assured that it's not that. I mean, it's not, right? I mean, you're using the regular courses, it's the way that things are being taught.
Yep, we have our standards, we have our state standards, and we continue to teach the standards. That is what we teach. We teach kids, you know, whatever grade level standards that they need to be learning. It's simply we're redefining that process. Again, this is not a thing. It's not a new program that comes in. It's helping teachers and students help redefine how do we go about the most effective way to teach individual students the standards. And again, part of that is coming from the idea that, you know, the example I used before is dividing fractions. As kids enter into this class and the standard is to learn how to divide fraction, if you've got half of your class who knows how to do that, good instruction says you shouldn't make that kid, half that class, sit there and get a 50-minute lesson on something that they already know how to do. You know, it's our job as an educator, and I think most parents would agree, I want my child challenged. I want them to be going down a road where they're constantly learning on themselves. And so it's about restructuring the teaching of we have our standards, and how do we go about redefining and teaching and learning so that kids more individually are having their needs met.
You know, along those lines, we did launch our new strategic plan, and in that, it's very specific. We have our R's of rigor, relevance, and responsive, and being ready. So there is nothing that's not rigorous about what we're doing in personalized learning. We really are after those high levels of academic growth for our students. And we're known in the state as being really good in our state with our students. Nationally, we can always improve. And we've got students, I've been learning where some of our students are graduating and going to college now. We've got a student from Nikiski going to Dartmouth. We've got students going to top universities, and they're also career ready. They've got certifications and they're starting out going straight into a career. They're not college bound. But that whole idea of rigor and then of relevance of the, how can my education be relevant? How can it be meaningful? If it's not meaningful, I don't want to show up at school. But if it's relevant and meaningful, then I'm going to want to go to school and be engaged with my classes. And then responsive, so that it's interesting and it's a high quality instructional model. And all three of those, the rigor, relevance, and responsiveness, help make our students ready for life, for college, or for a career, or what's next.
So you mentioned relevance and, you know, kids, if it's not relevant, you know, why show up? Have you measured that? Has attendance truancy gone down?
So what I'll add to that, rather than the truancy going down, is that we talked a little bit about how do we measure any of these? How do we know that we're doing a good job or not doing a good job? Where do we need to put our focus? So we have our KPIs, or our key performance indicators, and across the board for elementary school, middle school, and high school, attendance rate is top at the list, and we want a 90% attendance rate. That, if we know we're getting an attendance rate, then that's going to be something we can measure against success. I don't actually have the data right in front of me, and I can't log onto the internet at the moment to pull it up, but for what our truancy rates are. But we also know that the number of credits that a student has at any given time period also indicates their future success, and if they're on track to graduate from high school in 4 years.
And I'm not sure what our attendance rate is or our truancy rate. I'm not sure what that is, but I would also question, you know, we're just a few months into our personalized learning journey here. And I think, you know, if there was any effect, I think we're too early in this process. You know, I would love to have that discussion in a year or two from now, you know, after we've had some time to legitimately make an impact with personalized learning, and that we've got some things going in. As Peggy alluded to earlier, we've got, we're kind of rolling out personalized learning in three different waves this year. And so not all of our schools are even fully engaged in personalized learning in that conversation yet. So so I think 2 or 3 years from now, we're going to have some better quality data on, is this making an impact?
Oh, okay. I was wondering. You know, while let's take a short break, and I'm going to give Peggy our Wi-Fi password. and maybe another cup of coffee for myself. And we're going to be right back on the Kenai Conversation. We're talking about personalized learning here today. And we are opening up our phone lines on the second half hour. You can give us a shout at 283-8414. Good morning. I'm Jay Barrett. You're listening to the Kenai Conversation, and we are talking about personalized learning. That's right. It's a school district program. It's not a thing, as we've been told. It's a way of life, perhaps, a way of being, a way of thinking. John, for the folks who've just tuned in to the second half, give us a very brief rundown of what it is, just to remind people what PL is.
PL is not a noun. It's not something that we have. It's a verb. We personalize learning for students, and it's a way for teachers in the school district to redefine those concepts of what does it mean to be a teacher, and what does it mean to be a learner, and what does learning look like for students. And really, it's moving away from this concept of a one-size-fits-all, that you've got 25 kids, and whether you know how to divide fractions or not, you're going to sit through my lesson on learning how to divide fractions. And it's moving away from that one-size-fits-all model into a model where we respond to more individualized needs of students on where they are on their learning journeys.
All right. I should mention that John Podhass is the director. What is your title?
Yeah, my title is the Director of Elementary and Secondary Education for the school district.
All right. Yeah. And we have Peggy Erkeneff, who you are the word liaison is in your title. What is it?
It is a communications liaison. Oh. I get to be the storyteller for the school district and also the spokesperson.
Oh, terrific. Tell our listeners that we are taking your phone calls if you'd like to call in. 283-8414. Give us a shout if you have any questions about personalized learning in the school districts, and they'll try to answer them. 283-8414. We're talking about how this is not one size fits all for the students. That sounds like it also requires teachers to be able to shift gears, switch gears quickly, and move from one thing to another. If they've got six students over here who already know the topic and they're studying the next element or whatever is going on, they got six students over there who are way behind, and then they've got, 25 minus 12, 13 students in the middle who are right on fleek here, as the kids say, on point. How is the teacher going to handle having to do, basically they have to teach three different things then, right?
It's not necessarily a matter of, that spur of the moment, oh my word, how am I going to react to this? Because that's part of the planning that teachers do, they plan for the most part, knowing that as I go into a lesson, you've got certain kids and you're going to have kids who already know the content. And so when you're planning, what are you going to do with those students? What are they going to, and again, that's where we can leverage, we never advocate replacement, but we can leverage technology as a tool. We can leverage group discussion and project-based learning. We can leverage a variety of strategies to, when kids are off doing different things, on giving them a meaningful experience that they can engage in if they're not necessarily face-to-face working with a teacher during a 20-minute period. That's part of the teacher planning on what are they going to do in a meaningful way so that they can advance their own learning.
Which brings me to how have the teachers who have implemented this already, how are they feeling about it?
We've got some really good things going on, and I think overall the teachers, we call it our waves. We've got wave one, wave two, and wave three, as we've kind of broken this, not exactly a third and a third and a third, but our wave one school is well into this work. They started back in August at the beginning of at the school year, and I think the consensus from our Wave 1 schools and our teachers is there's a lot of value in this. They see a lot of the big thing is we are able to better target our instruction to meet the needs of our kids, and I think we've got some really good feedback from teachers and students that this is a really good environment that both teachers and students are liking. And then we've just begun our work with Wave 2 schools, and our Wave 3 schools work is coming up. We've not officially started with Wave 3. So, but the feedback from Wave 1 from that group of 9 schools is really positive.
Oh, which schools are those?
So the Wave 1 schools, our first one where we started, we broke it up with starting with our large elementary schools. And then the second wave was primarily our large middle schools. And then the third wave was primarily our large high schools. And so the first wave was our 7 large elementaries, which is in the Central Peninsula. We've got Soldotna. We've got Cay Beach Elementary, Mountain View Elementary, Nikiski North Star Elementary, Readout Elementary, Seward Elementary, Soldotna Elementary, and West Homer Elementary. And then we also not only wanted elementaries in that first group of schools, but we wanted some secondary schools in there. So we've got Seward High School and Skyview Middle School also in that first group of schools. Oh. So our 7 large elementaries plus Skyview and Seward. And that is, like I said, they're going. Things are going really well.
So the wave refers to they're the first ones doing it.
Correct.
Wave 2 are the people who are doing it next.
Yes, correct. Oh,
okay.
And by wave, by quote-unquote doing it, what that means is we're providing a tremendous amount of professional development to teachers because this is a different way of thinking about how do I run my classroom? And it's not a matter of just giving them a textbook and saying, here it is, go figure it out. The district is committed, if we really are serious about this personalized learning, we need to help with a lot of professional development on helping teachers acquire the skills and the knowledge that they need. And so that's really the last, since August with our Wave 1 schools, it's been about providing the professional development. It's providing training. It's providing workshop. It's providing a lot of talk time, collaboration time for teachers to craft what does this look like in my classroom and share their ideas with, you know, teaching partners from across the district. And so that's what our work with, when we talk about Wave 1, quote unquote, doing it, it's providing the education, it's providing the opportunities. And we just started doing that with Wave 2 now, is starting to give them those learning opportunities.
Right. Okay. Well, if you want to pop your headphones on, we have a caller. Let's see if I did this right. Hello, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you. Hello. I was listening to your panel discussion, and I have also been listening to the recent discussions about the school district budget. And I was really curious about, only because I haven't formed an opinion on the role and importance of teachers' aides in the classroom, how do you incorporate teachers' aides in your classroom, especially if you're able to afford them, and considering that they don't have as much formal education in instructional formats and curricula development as do teachers and school administrators, how much time do you have to, how much additional time are you finding that you have to invest in training support staff? I'll hang up and listen to this discussion on the air.
All right, thank you.
It's a great question, and for the most part in our district, the instructional aides that we have are dedicated to our special education department. Most of our aides in our school, in our classrooms, are there to support students with disabilities. So most of our classrooms, the vast 99% of our classrooms do not have what would be normally like a teacher's aide who's in there supporting the teacher directly just in our regular general education classroom. So that's pretty minimal as far as the training and the money and all of that, because those aides for the most part just don't exist in our school district. The training that are the aides that we do have, like I said, are usually attached with our special education department, and they do get just through, you know, the work with the needs of the individual students that they work with. They get the training that they need, because every kid is unique, but that's all taken care of through our special education department.
Oh, okay. You were talking earlier about rolling out this program, and started in August. I was hoping to go back in time to when this was first discovered by the school district, though, and what's the process of finding something like this, vetting it, and then acquiring it and implementing. Well, I guess we're talking about the implementation now, but acquiring it and vetting it and now the implementation. How did you get onto this?
So one of the, and this goes back, I'm willing to say decades in our district, on the fact that, you know, our district has always been looking at how can we improve education, how can we better provide services to our students and education to our students. And, you know, over the years, there's all those buzzwords and programs, you know, differentiated instruction and personal learning communities, professional learning communities, blended learning, small group instruction, digital, I mean, all the list goes on and on and on about the different things that we've done. And we've always, I think as a district, we've always tried to be reflective on, as we're doing something, as we implement a new program or a new initiative, looking at, is this working for our students, you know, collecting the data. And I think the idea of personalized learning came about from the idea of, really, personalized learning is, it's taking the things that we have done historically, and it's not anything new, it's not anything groundbreaking. You know, personalized learning is, it has elements of differentiated instruction, which we've done for years. It has elements of using technology, using computers as a basis of providing education. It uses a lot of things that we've done, but the idea of personalized learning is, and I think the aha moment for our district was about 2 years ago, attending a conference. There was a group of teachers who went to a conference, and that concept of personalized learning was kind of new on the national scene. And I think the team of teachers that were at the conference kind of had an aha moment, saying, you know what, it's what we're trying to do as a school district is not about a thing. I think we have tried for so many years looking for the silver bullet, the thing that's going to change education. And that, a couple of years ago, that aha moment was the realization, it's not a thing. It's a verb. It's a, how are we conducting business? We have the tools at hand. We have technology. We have great teachers. We have the concept of differentiated instruction. What we really need it is that mindset shift, that shifting our thinking on how are we delivering the education rather than what product we're delivering.
Mm-hmm. But the actual, did you guys invent this or did you have to buy it?
Well, so personalized learning is, it's something that, it's not an invention, it's not a thing, it's a different way of doing business, but we have partnered with a company called Education Elements, and the reason we partnered with them, and that was the aha about a year ago, is when we looked at what we wanted to do, and we had some awesome teachers. I called it pockets of excellence. We had some pockets of excellence, some teachers doing some really good things. But when we when we talked about scaling this to 600 classrooms, 43 schools, 8,000 students in our district all deserve the opportunity to have this, we had the real honest discussion about, how do we scale this? How do we take these concepts. And if we are serious about this and making sure that all 8,000 students have this opportunity in every one of our 600 classrooms, that's a pretty large lift. And that's where this company, Education Elements, comes in, and the fact that that's what they do is they help, they deliver the professional development. They've worked with hundreds of school districts across the nation on moving this concept at scale throughout an entire school district, not just this one or two teachers who want to kind of take it on as their own personal, you know, I kind of like this, so I'm going to do it. And that decision was made a year ago by our school district.
And so that is development for the teachers that you're talking about.
Yes. Yeah, that it's a heavy investment on the professional development of teachers, of helping teachers reshift that mind thinking on what does personalized learning look like in your classroom. And it's going to look like we talked earlier, it's going to look really different in a kindergarten class than a 12th grade math class, calculus class. And that's part of what the professional development process is helping teachers understand that, yeah, personalized learning is for students, but a big part of the professional development is we need to personalize that opportunity for every teacher, because it's going to look really different, like I said, from kindergarten to 12th grade, and even different from what your traditional classroom at Soldotna High School versus the Susan B. English K-12 environment over there. And that's going to look different. So it's about personalizing for the teachers.
Okay. Peggy, you look like you're about to say something.
So I think the other piece was, and this is the question I get a lot, is, okay, you've got one more initiative or one more program that you're doing, and this is not a program. It's the way we're doing business. It's the way that education is happening on the Kenai, and it's being implemented, like we said, in the waves. But this is not going to be something that is the new flavor of the month and gone next year. It's changing the way we're doing education and really going deep. And I think one thing we haven't talked about that I find really interesting that I get asked a lot is, what is a flipped classroom? And that was a term that came on maybe a couple of years ago. I started hearing that, of how do we flip a classroom and look at content or learn something at home or prior to something and then come in to the classroom. And so then we've already engaged with the content and the teacher is working in a different way. And JP, can you talk a little bit about a flipped classroom? That's just a question I get a lot.
Yeah, so the idea of a flipped classroom is that, you know, in a traditional classroom, you have the teacher who gives, and I'm gonna kind of talk broad strokes here.
And if you could do it in 2.5 minutes, that would be terrific.
Awesome. So typical classroom, the teacher gives the instruction, gives a lecture, and then sends the kids home to do the homework. And the idea of a flipped classroom is to flip that, in that you actually do the engaging piece of that, which is maybe this really cool video or this really cool project that you're going to do. And then rather than having the kids at home who may struggle with homework and how did you do that again? And I don't remember how, and I'm really struggling, rather than doing that independently at home with no support, that part is done in the classroom when the professional is present, who can help guide the practice and the kids who are struggling on the understanding. And that's part of that, again, it's redefining what does it mean to be a learner.
You know, it's amazing. I made it through school with the way things were, and it just seems so much better the way you guys are describing it here. You know, I'm looking on your website here as we're running out of time. Looks like this is a three year rollout, and it looks like it's three part waves mm-hmm. per year, and then you've got what it says here, a maintenance
or sustainability
phase.
Yes.
And so, like you say, this is good, or Peggy said, this is how teaching is going to be. It's going to be, it allows the, if I could try to summarize an hour's worth of your expertise, it's going to allow teachers the flexibility to teach different groups of students in their classroom at the student's learning rate.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's a pretty good summary.
All right.
And at not just the learning rate, but the learning style, because we all learn differently. I'm a really visual learner, and somebody else may need to be handwriting everything or be more a learner that learns with audio. So we all learn differently. So it's not just the rate that we're learning, but it's how we learn and how we engage.
And also the place. You know, the other part of personalized learning is learning does not stop when the bell rings at 3:18. Kids are always learning, and that's part of the new paradigm of education is I can enroll in an online class through a college or anywhere, and I can do my classwork at 1 a.m. if I wanted to. Learning is 24/7, and part of what we're talking about in this whole process is that's part of redefining learning does not stop at 3:18 when the bell rings.
All right.
It's always going.
Well, John Pottas and Peggy Erkneff, thank you both very much for coming in. I really appreciate it. Folks, you've been listening to the Kenai Conversation.